No, thank you.
Nope.
I'm alright, Pizza Cat.
Oh, yeah!
Nope.
Oh, Gilligan!
Pardon me. Would you have any Grey Poupon?
No. Nah. All right!
This is education! This is the final frontier of learning! These are the lessons we're learning with our friends today. Our fun time plan. Explore weird science facts. Look for new ways to embrace the journey of discovery. To imagine fun beyond where any fun has gone before. This is the Learning Friends.
The Learning Friends was filmed in front of Mr. Rogers' grave.
Sunshiny, never whiny.
Captain Skittlepants.
Stormcloud, always proud.
I'm TV's Brian Gumble.
And the champion of knowledge, that's me, Bimbo Loganaut.
May it please the Learning Friends. Today's lesson is number 505. Once upon a time. Star date, unknown. Original air date, 11/11/98. Today's special word is death.
Why, hello, students of the world! It's me, your guide through the University of Learning, Bimbo Loganaut. Today is a very special day because we're also broadcasting to our new affiliate, Uncle Nutsy's Playhouse. So give them a big old Learning Friends. Hello. I need you to mind your manners and put your brain hats on. Turn the understanding knob to 11 and get ready for the knowledge. Today we're going to learn a special lesson about losing loved ones to the random misadventure and peril that surrounds every waking moment of our lives. Oh, I think I hear Mr. Stormcloud rumbling his way on up. Hello, Mr. Stormcloud.
Oh, hello, Mr. Bumble Loganaut. As you all know, I'm TV's Bryant Gumble. And it's true, I have been known to rumble. Brought to you by what must be the oddest stint of community service I have ever experienced, but I must say that slapping my brother Greg Gumble in the face with an actual Gutenberg Bible was totally worth it. And now, without further ado, on to today's main event, Once Upon a Time. A fabulous example of a great premise being watered down to a middle-of-the-road oblivion. And Trevis sucks, and so do you, Greg. Thank you.
Oh, wait! Is that our friend Mr. Sunshiny? Here he is!
Captain Skittlepants here! A hearty howdy-a-do to all my fellow sailors on the Sea of Learning. Today, the winds of fun are blowing us to some wild new knowledge. Knowledge of your own mortality and the mortality of everyone you love. Now, I don't have to worry about this because I am an immortal being made entirely of Kinder Eggs, doomed to sail these wacky waters until time itself collapses and I am at last released from my charge. But you, on the other hand, oh, you will most certainly die someday. And what lies beyond? No one knows! Maybe nothing! You'd better start making peace with the uncertainty and the inevitability. And a good way to start is by watching Once Upon a Time and joining Naomi Wildman in her magical first steps into the emotional jungle of adulthood. Ahoy!
All right, kids! Here's a really long cartoon with a lot of talking. Pay attention as we activate the Funbotron.
Funbotron.
I like the Funbotron.
Funbotron.
Do we worship the Funbotron now?
Funbotron.
Worship him.
Bring unto us the knowledge, Funbotron.
Kill the pig. Drink its blood. Pour it on the Funbotron.
Funbotron is pleased.
So this episode, is, as we've been presented sometimes occasionally in the past, is a feast.
It is indeed.
A feast for the senses, for the mind.
That's one word for it.
It's got everything.
It's got some stuff, yeah.
Okay, so.
Some good, some bad.
Some strange.
Some strange. Some.
Starting with Flotter.
I'm Flotter T. Water.
We'll get to Flotter. So, opens up on a tropical alien forest, which yep. I was immediately, it's the Great Forest. It's the purported Talaxian afterlife.
Right.
And then when I saw young Naomi Wildman trotting through, I was like, she died.
Isn't this the same, the same hollow set as his trip to the Great Forest, right?
It looks very similar.
It does look similar.
This looks better than it did before. It's maybe because they hadn't put cheesecloth over the limbs.
Well, I mean, this is, technically a holodeck children's story time fun place, right?
Right. Right.
So the idea that every Federation kid has, this is a part of their childhood.
Yeah, they've all played this
game.
But I will say, it looks really good. Like, she throws up, she throws the rock in the pond, she's summoning a water spirit, she's consorting with devils. I'm about it.
Some of the effects are a little less great here.
Yeah, you know what? Like,
the effects are kind of terrible.
They're kind of terrible, but because they're definitely, they lean way hard into the children's programming aspect of this episode. So it kind of works for me, because it's like watching an old kid show on PBS. And as someone who grew up without cable, I was like, oh, I feel at home here.
There's a Zubily Zoo vibe to it.
I was thinking more like Eureka's Castle, but yes.
Yeah.
Or Barney, or
I should bring up Barney here.
Okay.
It's a Barney free zone.
Oh.
Wow. We've never established that rule before. I mean,
established.
You're entitled to your comfort. If you don't want us to talk about Barney,
I'd appreciate it if you
don't. So this
kind
world
of hard to get through this whole episode without referencing the most obvious anchor point, cultural reference point. Mm-hmm. But
we'll stick with comfy couch then. Is that okay?
Yeah. That's
or do fine. You have other weird feelings about the clown and comfy couch?
I mean, they're different kind of weird, but acceptable.
How do you feel about lamb chop?
Ooh.
Or the thing with
what about Sherry Lewis?
Oh,
mm-hmm. Ooh, okay. Ooh, you got feelings about Sherry Lewis, too.
I have strong feelings about her.
What was the one that had skidamarinky dinky dink, skidamarinky doo?
They were on.
That was the elephant.
That was John Paul and.
Yeah.
The other one.
Yeah.
No files found.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay, so.
Anyway, back to Blotter.
Anyway, so the Flotter appears. And as in a short order, he will introduce himself in full as Flotter T. Water, which was I was so thankful because I was driving myself mad in my notes. Like, did he say flutter? Is it like flotter? Like, but was it like flatter, but just said weird?
He looks like a drowner from the Witcher games.
He does. I was like, pull out your silver weapon, Naomi Wildman.
Steel for men, silver for monsters.
Okay, so she's hanging out with Flotter T. Water. It's easy to pick up that this is not this, because initially I thought, oh, maybe she's having a weird dream because the last time we saw her was in a weird dream. But no. This is her playing an educational video game, edutainment,
right,
on the holodeck.
Right.
Flotter has a plan to get rid of the tree monster, and Naomi's like, that's dumb. And then they meet Treevis. which. I had to stop for a second. It's like Treevis. And we were talking about this before. I feel like this is a shot across the bow from the writers of Voyager through the time warp. They have become aware of us, and they're doing things to attack me.
They're shooting back.
I wish his name was like Trevor, but Treevor.
Treevor. That's probably
well,
a Pokemon.
They kind of did that, right? It's like Travis, but Treevis.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, okay.
I thought it was Beavis.
What's up, Beavis? I did like the one thing about him when he kind of like fell out, when he kind of like plopped down on the ground, and he was like, Tim Burr.
Yeah, no, those that two, was, the two actors playing Treevis and Flotter seem like they're having a ball, and they don't blink at all. They're into being these characters in this child's video game.
I had a note at the very end of the episode when they have to kind of prance off at the end. I just wrote a note that said, actors, man. Like the things you'll do for your craft and a paycheck.
And this was 1 week's of work.
1 week of work.
Yeah.
Justin Lewis as Treevis.
I did see that the actor who played Flotter got special
Yes, he was a...
Called out in the credits. I guess he had a slightly better agent than Treavis.
Wallace Langham.
I'm sure he went on to an illustrious career. So anyway, she's hanging out with them, and there's lots of fun puns. My bark is worse than my bite. And clearly the each chapter of this seems to have like a lesson that it's trying to impart. And this one is about understanding people that are different from you. And it's interesting that Naomi Wildman has absorbed all of the knowledge and ethos of Voyager, because she's like ahead of the curve on this. I was like, she's like, no, that's stupid. You should be friends. And they're like, oh, it sounds like you two need each other. This girl's a thinker. And all the business about the Treavis hating the Flotter's moist palms and his sticky fingers.
I mean, I would hate his moist palms too. That's gross.
Who would you hate more? Flotter or Treavis?
Well, Treavis has sappy fingers, so it's a tough call. Moist or sappy? Moist or sticky?
I have a lot of contempt for Flotter that I can't quite explain. I haven't rooted out the source of it yet.
I have to say...
As does this episode.
Yeah.
I have to say I'm more of a fan, a Treavis fan.
I'm more of a Treavis guy.
Yeah.
I think I'm...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I feel like Treavis's design, I understand, he's a tree man. Mm-hmm. But Flotter's clearly got some, like, Harlequin, Drowner from The Witcher, Demon from some minor level of hell.
I thought he was a fish man, like a Drowner.
Okay.
But then it turns out when he gets evaporated later, he is actually a sentient composition of water.
The water
or else he would burn, not evaporate. Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm less comfortable with that.
Well, I mean, you know, that's fair.
We don't need to explore it.
Surely by the end of this episode, we'll discover the deep-rooted reason that you're very bothered by Flotter.
It'll come to me.
You'll have some sort of
flashback. Think of this like a therapy session for me for the next 45 minutes.
Anyway, Naomi gets called out because it's bedtime and someone special wants to say goodnight. And it's her calling. Her mom's off on an away mission, the first time we've seen Ensign Wildman in a hot minute. And she lets her know that there's an ion storm and the Delta Flyer took a beating, but they're coming back, they're on their way, all that stuff, blah, blah, blah. Just checking in, it's going to take a little longer than I thought. It's a nice, it's a very domestic sort of moment. And I think there's lots of good, interesting, like, domesticity to this episode of, like, what is a normal person's life like on Voyager?
Sure.
Then we cut to real fast. Tuvok and Wildman and Paris are the ones on the away mission. And they're like, oh, the ion storm's coming again. Brace for impact. And then it goes to white light, which is always the sign of shit just got bad. But we didn't have the budget to show you.
Just fucking up my new fancy shuttle, man.
Going back to what you said about the domesticity of this episode, we don't see that a lot in Voyager.
No.
You see that a lot in TNG and in Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
Because Galaxy class ships are residential vessels, like they're meant to have families by the hundreds. And Deep Space Nine, of course, is a floating city. This is kind of, we see little moments, domestic moments, but like Tom and B'Elanna, but this is the first time we've had an episode that I can recall where it really gets into exploring a family unit living and functioning on Voyager, a craft in an environment that is not intended to support that.
No, that's true.
So it's starting from the episode is starting from a good place.
Yeah, I generally like all those moments.
Yeah.
It's the shuttle part of the story.
Oh, yeah. Don't get me wrong. I'm not forgiving it for everything moving forward. But I'm just saying, I do think this episode starts from a cool...
I will give you that.
...kind of original
point. No, I'll give you that.
Mayday. Delta Flyer to Voyager.
But what about them Bogue shields?
They ain't working today. It's an ion storm, which, as we all know, ion damage does extra to droids and other electronics.
That's true.
And that Delta Flyer, if it's a Borg shield, that's just a robot that's a shield. So it's probably like triple damage.
Thanks for
clearing. That's science.
Thanks for clearing that up.
So we jump into a serious staff meeting because the away mission's gone to hell. They've lost touch with the Delta Flyer. They can't find their signature. And they're probably trying to find a planetary system to land on. And they're like, well, we should go get them. Like, well, there's a level 5 ion storm. And Janeway's like, we've been through worse. Let's go get them. And then Neelix kind of stops the meeting. It's like, what about Naomi? And they're like, I guess do whatever you want with her, basically.
We are not trained to handle situations like this.
This is your mission. You're her godfather.
Yeah, I'm inclined to let you take the lead on this. And Neelix's stance is like, we shouldn't tell her that anything's wrong because she'll panic, she'll have anxiety, all this stuff. And this begins the plot thread of Neelix wanting to shelter Naomi from what's going on. So now we cut to Neelix and Naomi having a chat as they walk around. She's talking about how it's time I carried my weight around here. He's like, oh, do you want to work in the aeroponics bay? She's like, fuck no, I don't want to work in the aeroponics
bay. Fuck you, Neelix, I don't want to work in the aeroponics bay.
She wants to go to the bridge and be like the captain's assistant, which is cute and wonderful. Then Seven comes in, and then Naomi is like, Neelix, don't move. It's the Borg lady. And then this is like a really interesting little moment
of young racism.
Of young racism. Naomi. Yeah, of young racism from Naomi.
Yeah.
Which I don't, well, it's definitely racism to Seven. I can understand anyone being frightened of the Borg, especially a small child. But yeah, it's like, wow, no one's talked to her about that, huh? But that makes you wonder what her mother thinks about Seth.
I had a note about that, too. I wonder what and the fact that she has a more sort of vague, all-encompassing racist remark about sick bay being full of creepy alien things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What's Ensign Wildman telling her in the
home? Know what's also in sick bay? A dead Wildman clone.
Surely they threw it out.
Surely they quietly.
No, it's in a fucking jar over on the shelf.
Jettisoned that.
Yeah, she's very uppity for a quantum clone.
Yeah.
She's not even the original.
You know?
Also, she's multiracial as a person.
Yes.
Like, she's half human, half whatever her dad's race.
Note the three cartilaginous spikes coming out of her forehead.
Whoa, whoa, look at a mirror, weird boneheaded girl, before you call out the Borg lady. But Neelix tries to correct her. Is like, she has a name, you know. And she's like, no, she'll assimilate you. I don't want to be in her collective. And it's like, okay, interesting. Harry Kim sidles up and then basically checks in with Neelix about everything with the away mission. And they talk about Naomi anxiety scale.
Also, there are four things on her forehead, not three.
Jesus. Oh, my God.
There are three spikes.
We also, at the tail end, we get a nice little bit where Seven rolls up on Naomi. He's like, hey, is this chair occupied? And she's like, gulp. And she's like, yes or no. And she's like, no, yes, you can't sit here. And Seven's like, whatever, humans are weird. And just walks away.
Whatever,
my human
feelings. Child. Bye.
And then we go to where, Neelix's like, well, we got to go to sick bay because the doctor wants to teach you some stuff. He's like, can we go to the holodeck first? He's like, I don't like sick bay. It's full of creepy alien things. And then she talks about the doctor talks too much. Can't you reprogram him or something?
Oh my God.
I was like, oh my God. That's
terrible.
He's a sentient
Chill out,
being.
Naomi.
What is this? It says some real things about her mama.
It does, because outside of whatever Ensign Wildman is telling her in the home, all this kid's been exposed to is Starfleet world. She should be the living embodiment of Starfleet ideals.
Yeah.
She's had no other influences that we know of,
right,
other than what Ensign Wildman. Whatever racist filth Ensign Wildman is.
I mean, maybe
putting
she
in her
also
breakfast cereal everywhere.
Maybe she also has some weird Maquis friend somewhere.
Yeah.
That's just super fucking racist.
She's on she's getting on the internet and getting on the Delta Quadrant equivalent of 4chan or really bad subreddits, you know.
I mean, later in the episode, we do see her moving around the ship totally unimpeded and mostly unnoticed.
Yeah.
She does make
you get the feeling she's underfoot a lot and hears a lot of things that maybe she shouldn't.
Yeah.
Right.
So I definitely can see her picking who knows where she's
offhanded, unfortunate comments.
It is odd.
Tasteless jokes that people make.
That she makes it all the way to the bridge.
I have a note about that later.
That seems like a security
problem. Another gross failure on the part of security, chief of security, Tuvok.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised by that at all.
That a child can just move around untouched and unnoticed into the most sensitive parts of the ship.
Yep.
He does what he can. So,
sit around and wait for opportunities to shoot things.
Yeah, if the security's too good, he'll never get to shoot somebody.
That's true.
Think it through. So then we cut back to the Delta Flyer. They're in the ion storm. They're looking for a planetoid to land on. The wavefront is accelerating. We got 30 seconds to land this thing. And Wildman's trying to find a good landing site. They realize that the mantle is Benamite, which they say like we would know what that was.
It's Dolomite.
But it's basically the crust is super fragile. Unless they get their speed down, they're going to shoot right through it. And they're basically like, well, fuck, we have no choice.
Like landing on a creme brulee.
It's
going to crack right through into the soup.
Mm,
creme brulee. drowning in creme brulee.
What a way to go.
All right. Paris is like, well, just keep us away from the volcanoes. And they find a site. He's like, I'll take it. And then Tuvok's like, watch out. He's like, Tuvok, if you don't have something positive to say, shut your gob.
I do like Paris and Tuvok interactions. We don't get enough of them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
True.
They have some nice, all the actors have nice little bits in the Delta Flyer scenes in this episode.
Yeah. Wildman's immediately, almost immediately, like, we're going to die.
but bang, bang, they land. We cut away from them for a bit. So the flyer has landed. This is the first time I've ever said this. You can be certain of that.
There certainly weren't any technical difficulties that require us to redo this.
An ion storm hit the studio.
So fresh and crisp, like Athena springing forward from the forehead of Zeus.
So, very cool shot of the crash. I really love that look, the weird sort of green plasma flames and all that stuff.
Right.
But they made it. They're 3 kilometers beneath the surface.
Dun, dun.
And luckily for Ensign Wildman, Paris has all that medical training we keep hearing about.
He is the medical 2IC of the ship. Mm-hmm. So she's in not the best hands she could be in, but the second best hands.
And no, he's still not the second best somehow. Even though there are
even
only
though
two,
he is number two.
Even though somehow. He's a number two, he's still like 37.
There's someone with no training who just has like good instincts that is better at administering medical care than Tom Paris.
Yeah, Big Spaghetti will save your life.
Oh, if only Ensign Big Spaghetti was Big here.
Spaghetti. I wish Big Spaghetti was here now. But yeah, so anyway, they have a nice exchange where he's like, oh yeah, you're fine. Just little bumps and bruises. And she's like, you're a great nurse, but you're a lousy liar. And he's like,
yeah, you're right. You're going to die.
You've punctured your kidney. You're bleeding internally. You need surgery or you're going to die.
All I have is a Band-Aid.
I'll give you some drugs so it doesn't feel as
bad. And I'll put this small single packet of hand sanitizer on the wound. That's all I got. That's all I got for you.
Squeak, squeak, squeak.
Is that better? If it burns, it means it's working.
Here's a Clorox wipe.
So I tell my kids when they had to put alcohol in a cut, I'm like, the burning means it's working.
That's right.
Stop crying.
But if there's no response to their distress call, all they can do is sit back and enjoy the view. Captain's log, supplemental. We tracked the flyer to the planetoid. We went through that fucking ion storm like it was nothing. I don't even know why we brought it up. We're trying to pinpoint their location. And then she has an unfortunate moment.
What show are you watching?
This one.
Oh, okay.
Always this one. Actually, I'm mainly watching Criminal Minds all the time. I have a sickness. I'm on season 8. Please help me. God, this is a cry for help. Is this not a bit?
Are you past Mandy Patinkin?
I'm way past Mandy Patinkin.
Okay, so he's left. I never watched it.
He's gone at the end of season 2.
Oh, okay. That early. Wow.
No, I will not. I will not start talking about Criminal Minds at this juncture.
What about Chicago Hope?
I watched a shit ton of Chicago Hope when I was like 13 or whatever.
Speaking of Mandy Patinkin.
That had an Alda in it, right?
Yeah.
An Arkin.
Yeah. And Mandy Patinkin would go and sing to get out his demons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they had a whole episode that was a musical.
Well, they had an episode where Adam Arkin is like having surgery.
He's like hallucinating.
He's hallucinating, and Mandy Patinkin is playing the piano and singing to him.
Did you ever listen to the Jake Gyllenhaal Sunday in the Park with George?
No.
It's much better than you think.
Okay. I was like,
I just have a hard time supporting Jake Gyllenhaal.
Why?
I really don't know.
He seems likable.
He's the Prince of Persia.
Yeah. I think that might be why.
It's royalty.
Look, Jake Gyllenhaal is super fucking weird.
He is very weird.
And that's why I love him. He keeps finding weirder parts of himself to put in his performance. Have you seen John Mulaney special where he's Mr. Music?
No, I should watch it.
Reserve your judgment.
The Sack Lunch Kid Gang or whatever it is.
I think my issue is I was very attached to Tobey Maguire.
He's the better Tobey Maguire.
As Spider-Man's.
Really?
I guess.
But Jake Gyllenhaal never plays Spider-Man.
But they briefly talked about Jake Gyllenhaal replacing him as Spider-Man.
So you're mad because
and
he was
I was mad because of that.
You're mad about an alternate timeline where Jake Gyllenhaal played Spider-Man, which is not the timeline that we're currently in?
Yes.
Oh, that's fair.
Yes.
We're never gonna get to the end of this episode.
Where is Travis?
Travis. Okay. Anyway,
imagine Jake Gyllenhaal as Travis. Now that's
I'd probably support him more.
God, he'd nail it.
Janeway
has an unfortunate phrase where she refers to Naomi Walbin as the littlest crew member. And that bugged me to no end. I can't explain why. It's like your problem with Flotter. I was like, that's a trigger for me, and I don't know why. Anyway, so they're looking for the flyer. It's buried beneath the surface, maybe. We don't know. And this is when I noticed Janeway's hair game is so big this episode.
Yeah.
And I think it continues in the next episode. It's like dominantly big.
And every scene it gets a little bigger if you were to measure it.
It's a little bigger.
Like once you notice it, it becomes like, what happened?
Mm-hmm. It's like that. It's like the hour hand on a clock. You can't look at it and see that it's moving, but if you look away for a little while and then come back, no, it's further around the circle.
Her season 5 contract has a blowout before she walks out for every scene in it.
Clearly.
So.
Like, it doesn't look bad. I'm like,
no,
I'm
she looks good.
Just but it's just like, I noticed it, and then I couldn't stop noticing how big her hair is in this episode. And I think in the next episode, too. Anyway, so she says, go take care of Naomi, whatever, get out of here. Then we get a cute scene where the doctor is teaching Naomi about mitochondria. And I thought it interesting how much of this episode is geared around education for children and how that education would be presented.
Yeah.
They give a lot of time to it. I feel like I'm maybe on your camp a little bit. If they had minimized the Delta Flyer scenes a little more, because they almost connect the dots where it's all about what do we teach our children? How do we teach our children? And then what do we teach them about death and about bad things that can happen in the world? And
well, I will tell you that the original script for this episode was mostly in the holodeck and primarily all about
interesting
that.
So it would have been her relating things that are happening in her outside world into her storybook world.
I think the idea initially was that more of an Alice in Wonderland sort of
sure
Neelix and Naomi in a make-believe world basically most of the entire show, and just occasionally getting glimpses of crap going
then
on outside.
Someone walked in and was like, we can't do that gay shit.
Yeah, it was you know who it was.
Yeah, I know who it was.
Chris Berman.
It was Rick Berman.
It was freaking Rick Berman.
Not Chris Berman. He's
that's for pussies. I'm Rick Berman, damn it.
This script could go all the way.
Have a shuttle and have it crash and have it be about.
Yeah, because the strongest parts of this episode to me are watching Naomi from a child's standpoint, from her perspective, navigate through this very dangerous world that we have come to know. More dangerous than just being on a, you know, galaxy class ship in the Alpha Quadrant. And every time they break away from that to show me the other three cast members, who all three who I like and I think do a very serviceable, if not admirable, job with their lines.
Yeah.
Breaking away to show me just okay, more another away team in jeopardy, like we have every single week.
Well, that
it kills the momentum.
Even like my problem with that is that it's not even well done. Like, there is no real tension in this
episode. Well, true. Once they crash, they can't do anything.
You know that they're going to be fine.
Wildman might die. You don't know that Wildman's going to live.
That's true.
I don't know.
You know that because you've seen the rest of the show.
Even when I first time seeing it.
And you know that she ultimately dies in a hot dog eating accident.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But there's no build. There's no, like...
They are quantum hot dogs.
Visceral. Yeah.
That's the problem, is once you eat one, it becomes two.
No, like, how many did I eat? Did I eat 100? Did I eat none? You don't really know.
It's a roll of the dice, and then you die.
Schrodinger's hot dog eating competition.
Right.
Wow. I think I'll give Josh the nod on that little debate. Like, because obviously the main cast aren't going to die, but Wildman could.
Mm-hmm.
Ensign Wildman could die.
No,
at any moment.
She's talking way too much to die.
I haven't seen her all this season. Like,
it doesn't matter.
Does talking indemnify her from death?
I just feel like if she was
that's
really
why we make podcasts.
If she was
we
really
can never
going,
die.
We'll live forever.
If she was really going to die, she'd been like super injured to the point where she's like passed out and like I just,
That doesn't happen to Chief O'Brien's buddy in that Deep Space Nine episode where they're crash landed and he's bleeding out.
Well,
he's freaking Susie Chatterbox, and then all of a sudden he just freaking keels over.
I'm just saying. Focused on the holodeck shit is my only argument, because the rest of it is mediocre.
I agree with that.
Okay, that's fine. Okay. Yeah, I agree.
That's what I'm saying.
We agree. We agree with you.
It drags down the rest of the episode.
Let's talk about mitochondria.
Let's go.
I love this little lesson that he's teaching about mitochondria and how, and then she's like, so it's friendship. the correct term is symbiosis. And he's like, friendship. And he's like, all right, fine, friendship. And then she throws out an interesting thing. My mom taught me that cooperation is more important than competition. And I'm like, this little glimpse into Starfleet young child education is fascinating.
That's like, right. That was lesson two.
Like, I want to know, like, what
after
that
the lesson of racism.
That's a true future concept. Like, that's alien to our current view of.
That is a post-capitalist society.
That's a post-capitalist concept. And it's like that. Like, if they could, I want to have that whole idea like expand and fold over me like a blanket. But we just kind of run past it, which is fine. Then she's like, wait, I'm supposed to call mom today. And can we try to call her? The doctor's like, no, she's dead. I mean, Neelix pops in at just the right time. And he's like, well, there's a time for school and there's a time for flotter. And they go on down to the holodeck and she's introducing Neelix to flotter and Treavis. His bark is worse than his bite. And Neelix, did you have a favorite holodeck program? And this is when the episode slowly gyrates, not really turns, to being much more focused on Neelix. Like, it almost like backs into being a Neelix episode by the end of the show.
Yeah.
Which I'm not mad about.
No.
Not mad about. And he starts talking about, well, we didn't have a holodeck, but me and my sisters, we had this beautiful forest right behind the house. My sisters and I, we'd explore, we'd tell our own stories, we'd make, and she's like, imagination? Like, what's that like?
So you had to just think of things instead of having a computer do it for you?
And then she said, well, where are your sisters now? And I was like, yeah, Neelix, where are they? He's like, the abyss of it.
Hard to say for sure.
So this effectively is a companion piece to the first Neelix and Naomi episode. Like, it's dealing with a lot of the same themes, same imagery. It's honestly, like, the more I thought about it as a companion piece to that older episode, which was called, what was it called? The Oblivion, the Great Forest?
Tree of Death.
Tree of Death. It wasn't called Tree of Death.
Tree of Might.
Tree.
No, that's a
the tree. Oh, that's a Dragon Ball.
That's a Dragon Ball Z movie.
The Z Fighters must unite. Okay.
Was it Oblivion?
I don't know. No, it's the one where he finds out that there's no heaven.
He dies, and then they bring him back to life with a Borg nanoprobes, and he doesn't remember going to the Great Forest. So he gets worried that there's nothing after death.
Mortal Coil.
Yeah, Mortal Coil. Yeah. And she's talking about, well, you have it. Like, I do like how they established that Naomi is sharp.
She's smart, yeah.
Like, she is a smart kid.
And I actually like this child actor, and I typically...
Yeah, could have been grading with a different
could
actor.
Have been grading with a different
actor. She was
actor.
Good.
Yeah, I was like, this is very much a Ruby Darnell type.
Yes.
Just asking the hard questions, connecting dots.
Very precocious, likes to dunk on characters for being wrong about things.
Scarlett Palmers is her name.
Oh, okay. Let's get her on the show.
She was born in 1988. In Riverside, California.
Oh, that's interesting. Do your sisters ever call you from the abyss of death? No, Naomi, they don't.
There's no phones there.
He didn't tell her that they were living in the abyss of death.
I know. Then they get to the holodeck and they're looking at the chapter headings. Like, Treavis and the terribly twisted trunk. She's like, no, I'm saving that one for mom or whatever.
Yeah.
Then she's like, oh, the ogre of fire. And I'm like, oh, I wonder what problematic thing is going to happen from this.
Everything's fine.
They come in to find Flotter and Treavis arguing because they've discovered a fire elemental, a plasma elemental, and his finger's on fire. And then she's like, use your water to put it out. And he does. And then he uses a spray finger to put out more fire. And it's just unsettling.
Yeah, it's unsettling.
And the effects are bad.
They're bad. And then they're like, well, what's your theory, Naomi? What we should do? And then
I think my issue with that is that could have easily been a practical effect.
But they CGI'd it.
Yeah, it was just for no reason.
Well, then the Ogre of Fire appears.
And it's real.
And burns
up.
Her friends to ashes.
Goes off like a nuclear bomb. Yeah. We
I was like, this game is intense.
We watch Flotter vaporize. And Neelix does have a great... look that he gives here when he delivers some line about, you know, like, well, maybe that's enough story for today, but he does have a great, what the hell kind of children's book is this?
Yeah, and I do like how they're subtle enough about this. Like, it takes us a scene to realize the person that was really bothered by this was Neelix.
Neelix, right.
Naomi just took it in stride like kids do. And he's the one that's, like, triggered.
He's super triggered.
And everyone, if you're...
I think it's your bedtime!
a parent or an aunt or an uncle or you've been in childcare in any way, you've had that moment where you're reading what seems to be a innocuous book to a child, and then, like, you turn the page. Because children's literature can take, like, a really dark turn unexpectedly. Right. Mm-hmm. And you have that moment where you turn the page, and it's like, and then the littlest puppy died. And the other puppies were so sad. You're like, shit, do I close this? Do I redirect attention?
What?
Is the kid ready for this? And you have to kind of make that. It's a smaller version of the larger decision that everybody's trying to make in this episode of, mm-hmm, is she ready for this?
Yeah, I distinctly have a memory of, I don't remember what we were watching. It was something on television. I was watching it with my mom. I was like, hey, can I watch this? She's like, sure, come on in. And then, like, a really graphic sex.
Oh, like, I forgot this was in there. Okay, do I roll with this? Do I play it through? Or do I, you know,
pause,
set something on fire to distract the child?
Look, a dog.
cut to engineering, where Kim's down there working on something, and Neelix shows up and says, hey, like, I know you're busy. Do you have time for this? He's like, oh, yeah, it's fine. I mean, like, and he's standing over Harry's shoulder while he's working on something that he's going to replicate. And he's giving him, like, oh, no, at least a little more like this, a little more like that. And he's like, Neelix, it's not an exact replica. And then they start talking about he's replicated that Flotter is a name he hasn't heard in a while. And it starts establishing that every Starfleet child plays this game, like with Flotter and Treavis and the whole thing. And then he starts talking about, like, well, the part of the game was, like, really, really upsetting. And he's like, ah, kids love to be scared. And Neelix is like, shut your goddamn mouth. They should never be scared because I'm scared. And he basically goes off on Harry, like, everything's wrong. A starship is no place for a child. And then Harry's, but I think she's pretty lucky. She gets to see nebulas.
Kids love nebulas.
Harry. I would have given anything for a chance like this. And then they pull out the most hideous doll.
God, it's horrifying.
I've ever seen, which I do like that at least they had Harry give the line, I forgot how ugly this guy was.
Yeah.
Which is like, oh, yeah, okay, fair. And then Neelix takes it and scurries off. We get a nice, long, pensive Harry Kim look.
He says, thanks, Ensign. Wouldn't he call him Harry?
He kind of alternates.
He does, like, stuff does like he? That. Yeah.
Generally, when he's at a place that's like their work.
It just seemed weird. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I didn't even notice it because it seems like he calls people different things.
He always calls Tuvok Mr. Vulcan.
Yeah.
But pretty much everyone else he calls Captain or their rank.
No, he calls Tom.
In the cafeteria.
Oh, really?
Like, because he's in engineering. They're, like, at work.
Yeah. On the bridge.
Maybe that's not true. Maybe that's not a true rule, but that's always sort of how I thought it worked.
I feel like you're making this up.
I dare you to go back and watch every episode.
I will.
To figure out if I'm right or not.
I will.
Anyway, Neelix goes and hangs out with Naomi. Guess who I found in the replicator? And she's like, thanks, but it's not really Flotter. He's like, Flotter's not even Flotter. He's a holodeck character, kid. And he, like, knocks over. You know, just
Flotter's also make-believe.
And she's
beams of light.
Yeah, she's researching about water and evaporation, about how to get the forest to cool down. And I was like, oh, neat. Like, I do really dig the concept that these games, these stories, are designed to provoke problem solving in the kids. It's like, oh, okay, pretty clever. And then also, like, creepy in the way that most children's education is, how it's, like, basically trying to massage your brain down predetermined pathways.
Yeah.
Sure.
Neelix is clever girl. I miss mom. When's she coming back? Soon. Stop asking.
Go to bed.
And then she asks, like, and he's like, was anyone talked to? She starts asking really smart questions. Like, was anyone talked to? He's like, oh, no, I'm sure they're just busy. Like, but Starfleet regulation, blah, blah, blah. They have to report into the bridge at least once per day. Did something bad happen to them? I'm sure everything is fine. I'll wake you up as soon as your mom calls. Even if it's 0200 hours? Yes. And then she's like, Neelix, and she points at the doll, which she totally shit on earlier. But now she wants it.
Oh, kids, am I right? Now it's good enough.
I need the so creepy.
It's no creepier than, like, Teddy Ruxpin.
Welcome. No, it's less creepy because it doesn't talk.
Teddy Ruxpin.
Teddy Rex.
Come dream with me tonight.
Oh, wow. I didn't remember that.
I just put
now you do.
I just put other tapes in there.
Yeah.
Like, you put like some Van Halen in
like,
there?
Yeah, like some Boys to Men or something.
Would he sing along with it? Would he be like, yeah, Panama?
His mouth moves. His mouth moves are pretty, yeah.
I never had a Teddy Rex.
You poor bastard.
And it shows.
What about
my
Grumby?
Adult relationships?
What about
Grumby?
Grumby?
What the hell is a Grumby?
What the fuck is
it's like Teddy Ruxpin, but a weird slug.
Oh, I vaguely remember. What about my buddy?
My buddy, wherever I go, he goes. I remember the commercial. I never had
what about
my buddy.
Kid sister.
Kid sister and me.
Oh, God. Okay, anyway.
But when your parents are done having children.
There's so much more of this episode.
Nope, it doesn't matter.
Okay. So he goes, all right, I just got to go faster. Stay ahead of you.
I will tell you, I only have like two more notes for this
episode. So he goes up and he pulls up a picture of Elixia, which is confusing because it looks like the picture of her from inside his dream. Did he take a photo inside his dream? Okay, it's fine.
I will tell you, this is just a screenshot from that episode.
Yes.
Legit.
Yes.
Also,
completely fucking lazy.
Aren't they in the Wildman quarters?
Yes.
Yeah.
So why is there a picture of Neelix's sister in the Wildman quarter?
No, he brought up he pulled it up on the main
his
own log.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought he just picked up a framed photo.
No. He opened a log.
And I really love the moment where he's like he's talking to Elixia like it's so many weeks since I thought about you or talked to you, and I have this child and I'm her godfather and she may lose her mother and what am I gonna do? And then I'm like she's right there. She's right behind you. Like I really expected them to pan
still
over and her to be like what?
Yeah, no. The entire time I was like she's just gonna be behind him and that's how she's gonna hear.
No way she's fallen asleep that quickly and she is very much in earshot and the door is open.
Yeah,
so it's a weird scene that they decided to not.
This
is
written and shot by people who don't have children.
Yeah, and know that they hear everything.
Cut to Neelix having a bad dream where it's basically where the Great Forest is being burned by Jatrell,
the Metreon Cascade, which he was off world for that, right?
Wasn't that the deal? He was not present. That's how he survived. Yeah. But obviously in his dreams and memories, he's always there.
Yeah.
And this is when I was like, oh, Neelix was triggered by the holodeck program. I was like, I actually thought, well done.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't see that coming. Then we go to Neelix goes to talk to Seven, which, man, how rough do you have it when the only person you can talk to for emotional comfort is Seven?
It's the only one awake.
And she's like, I thought I'd pay you a visit. How are things going? Do you miss your family? She's like, infrequently. Do you think about them? Infrequently. He's like, she was only 6 years old when she got assimilated, not much older than Naomi now. She's like, I barely remember them. And he's like, maybe that's a blessing. I'm like,
that's a
dark little
terrible moment. Thing to say.
Then Seven says, I adapted. The child Naomi will adapt as well. And then he's like, Borg wisdom. Which I had to rewind it and be like, what the fuck did he say? Like, Borg wisdom. Oh, okay.
Well, she's not wrong.
No, though. She's not.
Also, that's he's saying that as a jab.
Yeah.
A little racist.
It no, I labeled it a microaggression.
Yeah.
Definitely is.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah, your view on this doesn't matter because you're a freaking Borg.
You're
anyway,
a Borg.
That's what he's implying. Yeah.
Cut to Neelix on the bridge. He really wants to, he's in I need to help mode, which must be the most annoying time on the ship for everyone else. Like, I know that they must send out like a text thread. Hey, everybody, Neelix is in his I need to help mode. Just deal with it. So he's like, coffee, anyone? And then the captain's like, one more cup and I'll jump to warp, which is a really funny line. And he's like, any news? Like, look, we got three teams below the surface. So far, they haven't found anything. We need to be prepared for the worst. Hey, it's time to tell Naomi. And he's like, No. And she's like, look, I told you to keep her occupied, not lie to her. He's like, she's sensitive. Like, and he's like, well, you need to answer her questions. I know what's best for her. Like, he's basically yelling at the captain. On the bridge. And she's like, Neelix.
She's got a look on her face. It's like, listen, Garfield.
Yes. Yeah.
You will not shout at me.
She's like, Neelix. And she points over to Ready Room. And they walk over. And then he puts the coffee pot up on, like, the bridge before he walks inside, which drove me wild with anger.
That's where he likes to keep his coffee pot.
A, he shouldn't have a fucking coffee pot on the bridge.
Right.
But definitely don't just put it up. It's like up on the shelf next to where Tuvok stands.
Right.
What the hell? Anyway, Janeway says, you got to tell her the truth. Okay, hey, Naomi, your mother's buried under 30 kilotons of rock. Which made me laugh for the wrong reasons.
Sure.
And she's like, if you can't do it, I will. And I was like, I could see Janeway just being like, Naomi, your mom's dead. Talk to me later.
Well, she might not be dead yet, but she definitely will be soon. She actually, Janeway, you know, people joke about Janeway being the mean captain, but I feel like she handles this much more compassionately.
Oh, no.
Can you imagine if someone had come onto Picard's bridge and yelled at him like that? What that ready room conversation would have been like?
That wouldn't have been a ready room conversation. That would have been an airlock conversation.
That would have been a brig. If you're lucky, you go to the brig.
Well, Picard keeps a Klingon dagger under his chair.
Yeah, just in case.
I'm the arbiter of succession, fuck you!
And Sisko, just phaser, just shot him.
Phaser right in the chest.
Anyway, so he's freaking out. You don't have the right to tell her. You don't understand what is stake here. And then Janeway, Kate Mulgrew, has the perfect, like, oh, I know what's going on.
She grabs
his shoulders, and he both calms down and also realizes, I'm in danger. I better settle down.
Whoa. I am simultaneously being comforted and threatened.
Yeah.
He don't want Naomi to go through what I did. I lost my parents. I've clearly never recovered from it. And she's like, this situation is different. He's like, no, it's not. He's like, Naomi has you. That's the difference. She has you and all of us, but mainly she has you. And he's like, okay, I'll tell her first thing in the morning. She's like, okay. And then in the greatest largesse, come on back on the bridge and give us a hand.
Yep.
Okay, quick jump back to the Delta Flyer, where they're trying to, like, jury-rig a distress signal or something. He's like, ready, Tuvok? Cross your fingers. It doesn't work. The relays overload. And then they're trying to... The moment of Tuvok trying to comfort Wildman, I actually really like... It's the one worthwhile moment of all of these.
I will give you that.
Yeah, the probability of a rescue is low, but not statistically impossible. He's like, but I have a child. You don't understand. He's like, my youngest child has been without a father for 4 years.
Great little speech.
Yeah. I have confidence in the people around her and that I instilled my values.
That's the only part of any of the on-shuttle stuff that I like.
She will survive and prosper no matter what becomes of us.
Yeah, that's a good line.
Great, great little mini monologue there.
Yeah. Which also reminded me, like, why don't we get more Tim Russ?
I know.
Why no more Tuvok episodes?
The eternal question.
He's so good.
Why is this character and this actor so, why has he been so underutilized for the almost two seasons?
And also, that very thing, like, him being a father and having this family that he's set, like, is, like, been barely explored.
Oh, no, yeah.
Like, please tell me more about that, please.
It's been mentioned in maybe two episodes ever.
Yeah. All right, Naomi wakes up, and she's like, Mom! Neelix? Computer, locate Neelix. He's on the bridge, and she goes fucking through the halls, and she's coming across people that are, like, talking about medical drills. It's the only time we really see Torres in the whole episode is when she walks down the hall. And then I had the moment where I was like, first off, I was like, oh, is someone just going to be like, well, anyway, Sam Wildman are probably dead as
hell. Probably dead by now anyway.
You know, that kind of thing. But then I had the thought when she goes onto the turbo lift, I was like, is Naomi Wildman about to hijack the ship? She's like, deck one, bridge. I'm like, oh shit. And it's been shown many times throughout Voyager's history. Anyone can hijack the ship.
Just pull
it. Or escape from it, or steal a shuttle, or get a shuttle on it without
reconfiguring the security codes faster than the computer can compensate.
Meanwhile, down on the planetoid, Chakotay, they found a piece of the hull. The cavern is collapsed ahead of us. We still need to search for the survivors, and then it flashes back to the bridge, right? Naomi walks on as they're all like, well, we're trying to get him out, but we know what we're going to do. And then they see her, and they're like, Naomi. And everyone is like, and then she turns and runs. Neelix runs after her. And then he's like, okay, I can't find her. Computer, where's Naomi Wildman? In her quarters. But she used the old comm badge on the flotter trick. And once again, he's like, clever girl.
Shoot her.
But of course... he realizes that most likely she's on the holodeck. Oh, we see her go back onto the holodeck where she's like, computer resume program. And I love her, like, reaching way up to hit the buttons. It was nice.
The fact that a child can just show up on the bridge and nobody notices until she's there is a real problem.
Like, I feel like there should have been a look from Janeway to Tuvok and be like,
What the well, he's fuck? On the shuttle, fortunately.
Oh, well, yeah. Okay. Well, whoever.
He's probably glad to be there in
Big,
that moment.
Big Spaghetti, who's filling in at security.
Backup. Backup. Yeah. Deputy Chief of Security, Ensign Big Spaghetti.
Yeah.
Okay. Down on the planetoid, they believe they find the shuttle, but there's no life signs. He's like, well, we can't get a lock to beam them out. Well, we'll have to transport the entire ship. Okay, we'll need to dig it out. And then they said the two-word phrase that I've been waiting for my entire life, phaser drills.
Right.
I was like, oh, yes, fuck yes. Okay, now we go to, like I said, much like the Tuvok moment before, this is the one sort of moment that's sort of worthwhile, is them recording their final logs. Yeah. And this is where we have Tom. He's going first. He's like, hey, B'Elanna, I know, you know, no more day-old pizza laying around, and you won't have to watch Captain Proton again. And then the computer says something like oxygen will elapse in 10 minutes. Like, don't mind the computer. She's just jealous. I'm talking to you. So long.
So long.
He it doesn't was, say I love you.
It was so weird.
It's actually really interesting.
It's super interesting.
I think it's really interesting. But and super especially weird. In the shadow of several conversations we've had about mm-hmm. the nature of Tom and B'Elanna's relationship. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'm giving the writers too much credit. Maybe I'm thinking, how would I have written this? But I love that there's a bit of a pause there, and he kind of looks up like he's feels, oh, I guess I should say I love you. But then he's kind of like, but I don't.
But I don't.
And she knows that I don't. And she doesn't love me, not in that way. So long in transmission.
You're the one person I have to send it.
Yeah.
Like, he should have really recorded it for Harry, let's be honest.
Oh, yeah, he should have.
It's
sad, and it's weirdly affecting. And again, maybe we're projecting our own sort of headcanon onto their relationship.
Well, yeah, we've been
maybe the writers
it.
Aren't as sophisticated as we want to give them credit. But
yeah, we've been talking. But I think when you compare it to Wildman's speech, yeah. which is not over emotional. It's actually less emotional than his.
Yeah.
But at the end of it, she of course says, Naomi, I love you.
Right.
And then they give a shot of Paris looking a little awkward, like, maybe I should have said I love you.
Do I have time to re-record mine? Real quick? Is it too late? Have you clicked send? So long. God.
So long.
It's so tragicomic more I think about it.
Yeah. And then, but also like the bit where they're like, hey, it's your turn, Tuvok. Because Wildman hasn't thought of what to say. He's like, I prefer to make my farewells in written form.
Of course you
do. Of course you do. But anyway, so oxygen depletion in 10 minutes. Listen to Neelix. Then we go to Naomi on the holodeck. And Neelix comes on looking for her, and Treavis and Flotter gang up on him like, go away, you're a liar. He's like, I thought you vaporized. And then like, she's like, delete characters. And like, holodeck controls have been encoded. I'm like, oh, damn.
Mm-hmm. Safety protocols deactivated.
Extreme risk.
Flotter attack.
I wonder if this liar can swim. And then he sees like the top of Naomi's head. He's like, please let me talk to you. And she's like, okay. And he's like, and then Flotter and Treavis are like, you be nice, no more lying. And then he goes over and he's like, hey, Naomi. And she's like, is my mother dead?
Maybe.
Maybe, but until we know for sure, no one is giving up. How do I know you're telling me the truth this time? And then he comes clean. He's like, I lost my mom in a terrible war, my father and sisters too. And I remembered how I felt, so I wanted to just keep you from wondering. And like, you were pretending nothing bad happened to your family. And do you do that all the time? He's like, sometimes. Does it help? Not really. Like, woof. Woof. Yeah. Affecting. Then they get word that there's a level 8 ion storm coming and they got to get out of there. So he takes her back to your quarters. And Flotter and Treavis like, don't leave us, Naomi. And they're like, I'll be back. I promise. There's another ion storm approaching. They need just a few more meters to dig through. They only have 6 minutes. We got to make them out. It's very one of those like, oh, we're coming right down to the wire that we arbitrarily established. Anyway, what a shock. It works. We get a last little bit of oxygen depletion in 2 minutes. And then Paris is like, man, I didn't expect I'd go this way. Like,
did you envision a more heroic death?
I didn't envision dying at all because I am the speed god.
Yeah.
The slayer of other gods.
In accepting the inevitable, one finds peace.
I'll stick with Live Long and Prosper. It's cute.
It's a good little exchange. Like I said, Paris and Tuvok, that's a good... Paris is really good at pairing... I mean, even though... You take the character of Paris by itself, There's not a whole lot going on there. Mm-hmm. But he may be the best in the whole cast at teaming up with other characters.
He's an excellent foil.
Yes. He brings out really good lines and really good moments in other characters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. His reactions to other characters are the best, I feel.
He feels so much more authentic in those settings.
Yeah, he's quick-witted, mm-hmm. he's funny, he can, he's,
And he's kind of just like the generic white dude.
He is.
And I think that's what makes him a good foil is that other characters, the things that are cool and different about their characters can bounce off of him very ably.
Yeah.
They're in the shuttle bay. Engage. Once again, we're just not going to show that. We used up the budget. Sorry.
Yeah.
And then we cut, clearly what's a few hours to maybe a day later. We're going to go see mom. And then
she had to get surgery.
She just finished surgery. Big hug. Everything's fine. Captain's log. Wildman is recovered. Don't worry about that Ensign Wildman. She'll be fine for many, many, many episodes to come.
We'll see her about 12 to 15 episodes from now. She'll prop back up.
Cut to final scene. The Wildmans, Naomi and Samantha. Sam. I like Sam Wildman. That's a good spacefaring sort of adventure name.
Yeah. Or a cowboy.
Sam Wildman. Fastest shooter in the West. Okay. So they're going to have tea with Flotter and Treevis. And this moment not blew my mind, but opened up a whole other realm of questions that I have about this world and this game and these characters that they remember Samantha. And then when we've already know that Harry played this game, and then we learned in a bit that Janeway played this game, that the characters remember you. That you can come back 30 years later, you grew up. How are things going? I'm like, just the concept of as a child, the things I enjoyed as a child, stories and video games, being able to come back 30 years later and those characters remember you, super interesting.
Like characters in KOTOR remember you when you come back.
Here we go again, Karth. Oh, son of a bitch.
Another Dark Side playthrough. Okay.
Oh. Oh, you never let me finish that dialogue tree. Shut up, Karth. I'll put in Mass Effect and kill you. Don't think I won't.
No, really, though, I will, because your character's terrible in Mass Effect.
Right. I did like the line about, I think J.K. Janeway's line, here's to happy endings, which I think would have more resonance if more than 5% of Star Trek episodes had downer endings.
Yeah.
It doesn't land the same way like the Empty Child episode of Doctor Who. The Just This Once Everybody Lives.
Yeah.
That's powerful because especially in classic Who, people die.
You can't save everybody.
So it's really powerful. It's a bit, I don't know. I still liked it, but it just made me think about that. And she's there. She's checking on my future captain's assistant. It's like, oh, I think she's hunting a giant beetle. Sounds like a dangerous mission. And then she talks about how, oh, I remember this. I flooded the entire forest. I was 6 years old. I figured that made sense to get rid of the fire. I diverted a river. It's like, get a hold of yourself.
Created a mosquito monster named Stinger, apparently.
And this is the example of an episode that doesn't really have a strong button moment. It just kind of fades off. And then we long, lingering shot over this beautiful set. They will never use again.
Yeah.
I would be shocked if we ever see this again, which maybe that's okay. All this artistry that went into this set, this physical set, let's look at it. Just look how beautiful and remember. And
sure.
So that's the end.
Yeah.
Final thoughts.
I wish they had stuck with their original script, basically.
Sure.
Where I think the original idea was that, 90% was on the holodeck, and occasionally they do some quick shots back to some, shit going crazy outside of the holodeck. But most of it was in the holodeck. I think had they done that, it would have been a better episode. As is, I like all the stuff in the holodeck. I like Naomi. I think actor did a good job, and I like all the Neelix stuff for the most part. I just wish if they wanted to have the outside stuff, I wish the Neelix dealing with his past trauma had been more of the B plot than the shuttle stuff, because the shuttle stuff just wasn't that great. Even though we got a couple of good lines and a couple of good moments from the shuttle stuff, I it just doesn't add anything to the episode for me, because there's no real tension, at least, you know, from my perspective, as far as watching this. It didn't seem like there was really much danger. It's like, yeah, she needs medical attention, but just, I don't know. They could have made it seem like she was, you know, more injured or something to ratchet up that tension.
Fucking, like, strut through her stomach or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You did say it's internal bleeding.
I understand that.
That's the silent killer.
Yeah.
Right.
That and heart disease. They could have said, your injuries are not that severe.
Sam, however, you've got space diabetes.
You do have angina.
Right. You've got heartburn. No, because they shoehorned all the shuttle stuff in, and obviously it's shoehorned. Mm. Like, this was not a part of the original plan. Thanks, Rick Berman. I think at best the episode's sort of mediocre, middle of the road. I'm going to say it's just to the other side of towards bad for me. It has good moments, but I think it falls short overall.
I see your point about the shuttle cutaways. I think we could have done without them. I don't think that they're as bad as maybe you're saying that they are. As we talked about earlier, I don't agree with you. I think if I was watching this for the first time, I would believe that there was a chance they were going to kill off Wildman. To me, I don't think that they're telegraphing that she's going to survive. And I like the Tuvok speech. I actually really like Tom's, it's interesting little insight, if you're looking for it, into his relationship with B'Elanna and where it is at this point. That being said, yeah, I will agree with you that it's probably a stronger episode if they just don't add the extra baggage of cutting away to the shuttle. We could have just known they had an accident and then they show up at the end and they're fine. And that would have made it a stronger episode overall. Yeah. But I think to me, the rest of it is so coherently executed, and I think they rather gracefully dovetail the Neelix follow up into Naomi's story and what she's going to. To me, it's not so much like the presence of the shuttle scenes doesn't take it from like an A to a C minus for me. It takes it from like an A to a solid B plus. So in my mind, this is still in the range of a good, effective episode. It's not so distracting that I then come away from this episode thinking, what the hell were they trying to accomplish?
Right. I don't know. I do feel like season three, hell, maybe even season four, we would have probably given it a pass. I don't know. I'm trying to be, more harsh, I guess. I don't know.
Harsh.
Well, I know we sort of collectively decided that middle of the road episodes are going to get grouped into bad now.
Yeah.
But I think this is better than middle of the road, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree that this is a messy episode where the inclusion of all the... if they just cut down half of the Delta Flyer scenes,
yeah,
it would have been stronger. I definitely agree with that. But also, I agree with Josh that, like, it seems like this is a writer, like, writing team, whoever worked on this episode, incorporating Rick Berman's suggestions, shall we say,
right,
in a reasonably graceful way without losing what was good about the initial idea. And also, I really enjoy when we see parts of this world that we don't normally see. Like, we see it from a kid's perspective. Sure. And I really like seeing some continuity with Neelix and his longer character arcs. And also, like, this is a very Voyager episode. This is not an episode any other Star Trek flagship would do. Mm-hmm. Like, this thing that's all on the holodeck about a children's story and about learning about death through that lens. It's super weird and interesting. So for me, it's easy to forgive the sort of saggy Delta Flyer scenes. Like, they're in trouble. They're in so much trouble.
Yeah.
You know, like, we swear they're in trouble. All that stuff. Like, so yeah, for me, I still think it falls over on the good side.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm just frustrated by the premise was good. Like, the idea, like the initial idea was good. And I hate that. I just hate Rick Berman. I think that's my issue.
Rick Berman.
Well, there have definitely been other episodes. where we've had to say, okay, the premise is good and they botched the execution.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is perfect. This is a case where, to me, the execution's not as good as it could have been.
Yeah.
But it's not botched.
Well, I think
it doesn't go down to that.
All the holodeck stuff is executed well.
Yeah.
And all the Neelix stuff is good. I don't know. I just imagine an episode where it's mostly there, and then occasionally they, you know, will cut away to explosions and people running around and shit happening, but it's like very short. And then at the end, they're walking out and they're like, and you know, like Sam Wildman walks up and be like, "So how was your day?" "Oh, it was fine." You know, and then that's like the end of the episode, you know. But yeah. All right, fine.
So you would have liked it if it had just a completely different story.
Well, no, or if it just been about her and the Ogre of Fire and Neelix running around, you know.
And you're just, a blotter. You're a flotter stan.
Right.
You're a flotter exactly. stan.
You're
like, give me more flotter.
I would have preferred more of a slice of life of Naomi Wildman sort of thing. I like that perspective. I do like that part of the episode. I think it could have been a good episode if they just stuck with that.
Yeah, and I will say I'm not mad about the thought of seeing this character again in future episodes. Mm. Normally you're like, oh, a kid, great. But no, cool. I like this actress. I like that character. I like how they've developed her. It seems like they could probably tell some pretty fun stories with her.
Sure.
But we'll see about
we'll
that.
We'll see about that.
What a weird cartoon! What do you guys think?
Well, Mr. Loganot, as you know, I am TV's Bryant Gumbel. I can say without a doubt, this has been the single most catastrophic sci-fi episode of television that has ever existed and will ever exist. It is the Greg Gumbel of genre TV. Thank you.
What do you think, Captain Skittleheart, whatever your fucking name is?
It's Skittle Pants! Captain Skittle Pants! Shiver me timbers! Our friends on the Voyager certainly learned a lot about facing death and its many shadowed faces, didn't they? Good thing our friends in the writer's room wrapped it all up in a nice happy bow at the end. What's that you say? You wanted a story about death that doesn't pull its punch? Well, take a graduate course on 19th century French literature, you little rain cloud! This is Star Trek! This is a UPM show about space people. Isn't the reality of death and loss sad enough for you? Cut the writers and yourselves some goddamn slack. A toodaloo! Well, it's been a long day of learning, hasn't it, kids? Thinking about death. Thinking about how your parents could die at any time. Literally. Any time. I guess the best way to think about Lesson 505, Once Upon a Time, is it's fun motational. Well, see you guys next week. Time to hop on my galaxy horse and ride on off into the cosmos. Giddy up, Caligulon! The Learning Friends is recorded in front of no one. Bimble Loganot is played by Derek Adams. Stormcloud Always Proud, TV's Bryant Gumbel, is played by Jonathan Sparks. Sunshiny Never Whiny, Captain Skittlepants, is played by Josh Darnell. All episodes of The Learning Friends are not intended to be viewed by anyone over the age of 2.